All right, Alexander, let's talk about the economic situation in Russia, in Europe, in the United States, all over the world. What's going on? Where should we start? Let me just throw the one figure out there that everyone is talking about, and that is at this moment, right now, on a Friday, it is 67 Russian rubles to one USD. So I think that's a good launching pad for this video.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, we can see that the situation is, shall we say, not a situation where the Russian economy is simply collapsing. Let's not be complacent about this. The ruble goes up and down. It's very volatile. A few hours ago, yesterday, it was close to 65. So, it moves around because it's a very, very volatile situation. But regardless, the overall truth is that the Russian economy has not collapsed, but it is experiencing inflation. Nabulina, the head of the central bank, said that if you disregard the sudden price spike at the end of February, early March, it's now settled to a rate of around 10 to 12%. That is high, but it's about the same as what we're experiencing in the West. The Bank of England has now come out and has said that inflation in Britain will hit an annualised rate of 10% in Britain by the end of this year. So, inflation in Britain will be roughly rising to that same level as the Russian, except, of course, everybody knows that inflation in Britain is, in fact, in reality, already higher than that. But that's going to be the global number. We're going to see the same in the United States. I saw inflation in Estonia is now 18%. Inflation figures in Germany are pretty awful. But the other big news is that everywhere, Russia as well, we're now seeing contractions, economic contractions. The real economy is being hit. So the Russians expect an 8% GDP fall this year. But again, that's not so out of line with what everybody else is going to start suffering as well. The Bank of England also says that Britain is falling into recession. So, of course, is the United States. Germany may be falling into recession faster than everyone else's because of, this economic war. But, of course, the other thing is this. The Russians have a plan how to deal with that recession. The things that they're suffering. So they've got all kinds of people working out how to work out import substitution, how to increase supplies of clothes by finding people who can make buttons. I mean, one of the examples Nabulina gave was, that what's affecting the garment industry is that they had to import buttons from the European Union, and that's become much more difficult. But, you can always find people who will start to produce buttons and all of these other various things. In the West, what we are doing, and this seems so bizarre to me, is we're making ever more weird decisions. So the European Union is still trying, despite resistance from Central and East European countries, to impose on itself an oil ban, an import ban of Russian oil. This is a time when energy prices are spiking, when there's diesel shortages, when the very last thing you would want is to increase inflationary pressures in a tight oil market by doing something like this. But nonetheless, that's what the European Union wants to do. It seems very strange, but it is surely at least equaled, if not surpassed, by this really very bizarre thing that I saw. I saw it on Zero Hedge, but I believe it's true, that the United States government, the administration, the Biden administration, at one at the same time as it is releasing oil from the US's strategic reserve in order to try to prevent oil prices skyrocketing, is now simultaneously buying oil in order to replenish that strategic reserve. Now, that seems so completely illogical that, you know, I do wonder at the thinking that is going on behind all of this. And I get the sense that there are some people in the US administration, Janet Yellen, for example, who's starting to say, well, hold on, this really isn't making sense. She tried to talk the Europeans, for example, out of going for the oil embargo on Russian oil. But still, it's the hardliners, it's the neocons, it's the people who want to wage this economic war of attrition, who are still in charge and who are still dictating policy. Now, if you have that, if this is what's happening, if politics is driving all of this, then inevitably we're not going to be looking for ways out of this problem. We're going to be only looking for ways to make it worse. And that's exactly what's happening. So whilst the Russians are trying to deal with their economic problems and doing it reasonably successfully, we're not even interested in doing that. We're just saying, oh, well, you know, it's very bad that all this is going on, but let's slap some more sanctions. That seems to be what we're doing instead in the West.
Yeah. Powell raised interest rates by 50 basis points.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? Is that going to help the situation or?
Well, in a word, no. I mean, it's the kind of thing that if he'd done this last year, when Biden, when the administration started this whole inflationary crisis by starting to expend money, you know, like there was no tomorrow, to turbocharge the US economy. If instead of, you know, colluding with all of that and by persisting with QE and all those things, if Powell had, you know, said, well, you know, to the administration, well, look, if you're going to spend like this, I'm going to have to raise interest rates by 50 basis points. Well, that might have had an effect, but it may look impressive now, you know, because it's the biggest increase since 2000. But relative to the scale of the inflation problem, it's nothing. It's a bite. It's a flea bite. It doesn't remotely start to address the problem in any kind of serious way. So what it says to me is that the Federal Reserve Board understands how bad the situation is, but is still far too nervous because of the enormous amount of leverage in the economy to actually get a grip on the situation by increasing interest rates to the level that would really dampen demand and really bring this kind of this surging inflation under control. And the same is true in Britain, by the way. I mean, the Bank of England raised interest rates here, but by, you know, I think they're 1%. I mean, hardly an amount that's going to really make an impact when your inflation rate is 10%. I mean, these are interest rates which are falling ever deeper into negative territory in real terms. And, of course, Christine Lagarde at the ECB, she's still keeping nominal interest rates at 0.5%-. I mean, that seems incredible, but that's what she is. And she is still engaging in QE, as incredibly, as I understand it, is the Bank of Japan. I mean, it's, you know, illogical, also, it seems to me. I mean, to the point of absurdity, but it is what we're doing.
Yeah, what's going on in the UK? Because they've been giving out, like, warnings every single day now, it seems, to the citizens of the UK to prepare for just a horrible economic year ahead. What's going on there?
Well, it is. It's exactly what you describe. It's a deepening, picture of deepening economic gloom. Whenever you talk to people now, everybody's talking about the fact that living standards are falling, that prices are falling, that are rising rather, that things are getting worse, that people are having to find ways of getting rid of their dogs. I mean, I know people who've apparently can't afford to keep their pets anymore. So, you know, you hear all of this, but we are trapped in a political state of stasis because the political class has closed off all options. So we've just had local elections in Britain, and what it showed is that Boris Johnson's Conservative government, which is the most incompetent government in economic terms I can think of, which has presided over the worst decline in living standards that Britain has experienced since modern statistics first started to be taken in the mid-1950s. Well, this government lost some ground in London, which is a arch Remainer city, which detests what they still see as this Leave, pro-Leave government. But everywhere else in the UK, or at least in England, it held its ground. And the Labour opposition, they made some gains in London, but everywhere else, they actually lost ground. Now, that's because people are very unhappy with the government, but they look at the alternative, the Labour opposition, and to say that it doesn't inspire them would be an understatement, because to be straightforward about it, the Labour opposition on all the key policies takes exactly the same line as the government does. So you get a sense of a country that where things are getting harder for people all the time, but which is in a kind of political trap. It may be that if Nigel Farage gets himself together and reorganises his party, he'll be able to break through. But he has to find a theme to do that, and he's basically frozen out of the media. And in the meantime, well, if you get protest votes, they go to people like the Greens and the Liberals, who are ultimately as much a part of the political class as the two main parties are. So we're in a trap. And we're in the same trap as pretty much everywhere else in the West is. Only in the United States does one see some signs of real political activity with, you know, with the Vance primary, with DeSantis making his moves in Florida, with things of that kind. Now, I don't want to overstate their importance, but if you want to look for political leaders who tell things as they are, well, again, you have to go to Eastern Europe, where Viktor Orban has now penned a really exceptionally tough letter to Ursula von der Leyen, basically telling her this oil embargo idea that you insist on imposing on us is crazy, and you've obviously taken leave of your senses.
Well, since you mentioned the Greens, and since you mentioned leave of your senses, what's going on with Olaf Scholz and Germany?
Yeah. Well, apparently now he gets heckled and booed wherever he goes, Olaf Scholz does. That's partly, presumably, from people who are unhappy about the fact that Germany's sliding into recession, living standards are falling there, the Mittelstand businesses are coming under unbelievable pressure. But it's also, I suspect, incredible though it sounds, other people, perhaps predominantly Greens, who think he should do more. Sanction Russia even more, send even more weapons to Ukraine, do all those kind of things. The thing with Scholz is that he's managed to satisfy absolutely no one. And again, we have the same trap, because the major parties, the CDU, CSU, bloc, the SPD, and of course the Greens, are all locked in to this same policy of sanctioning Russia, supporting more and more EU integration, sending weapon systems to Ukraine, taking all these very, very hardline positions, even as they undermine the entire basis of Germany's economic system. I still personally think that before very long, you're going to see this government in Germany break down. I think that there must be growing unease, especially within the SPD, at the way in which the government has essentially been hijacked by the Green ministers, by Habeck and Baerbock. But I still think it's going to break down. But I'm not convinced that whatever government replaces it is going to do anything very different. There are political alternatives in Germany. There's the AfD, which is still there. There's also Die Linke. They both might grow. But yeah, they're very far from achieving any kind of political breakthrough. And it's the same is true in France, as we saw with the presidential election, which took place a few weeks ago. So we are accelerating towards the cliff edge, but there doesn't seem to be anybody who's able to either slam down the brakes or take action to change the driver.
Why doesn't Russia just be done with it and sink the EU economy? Because it seems like they have the means and the ways to do it. Why don't they just do it and just be done with it?
There are lots of people in Russia who say that that's exactly what they should do, that there's no sense any longer in supplying gas to the EU, because if we're in economic war with them, so if we're in an economic, if they're waging an economic war against us, why should we hold back? I'm going to make a number of guesses. I think, firstly, as I said, Russia still does get quite a lot of hard currency. Well, hard currency. They still get a lot of euros and dollars and things like that. And that's useful to them at this time. I mean, you know, you don't just forego money. You don't do illogical things like the EU is doing. You don't hurt yourself in order to hurt others. So there is that. I think the other thing, though, is, again, there is still this lingering belief in Russia that the country needs to preserve its reputation as a reliable supplier, that if it takes these kind of moves, Beijing and Delhi won't like it, and therefore we sort of hold back. And I think that is not to be underestimated. The Kremlin is very keen on keeping doors open to countries around the world. So Lavrov got himself involved, and as we know, in that ugly spat over, a certain Austrian German politician's background. And that caused a lot of offence in Israel. And Lavrov himself refused to back down. And, of course, Putin then telephoned Bennett, the Israeli prime minister, and apparently personally apologised. So the Kremlin is keen to keep its diplomatic bridges intact with other countries. And that may be causing it to act with greater restraint, both in its conduct of the war and in its of the actual military conflict, and perhaps also in terms of its economic actions, than perhaps it would otherwise do. I think this factor, by the way, is underestimated. I think people don't realise the extent to which the Kremlin has to look at what countries around the world, China, obviously, India, increasingly Brazil, what they're all thinking and what they want and what they're saying. So I think these are the factors that are in play.
All right. We will leave it there, everybody. TheDuran.locals.com. And please go to the Duran shop. 10% off when you use the code GOODDAY. Take care.